This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Leaving your job is a true leap of faith. So much uncertainty. There are endless number of questions to address. What am I trying to do in my career? How much should I have put aside? Especially if that new job doesn't crop up as fast as I might like. However, despite these uncertainties, millions of Americans have joined the Great Resignation by leaving their jobs either to try something different or maybe even check out of the job market entirely. Among the try something different, digital journalist Emily Olson.
Like a lot of people, I had been unsatisfied with my job before the pandemic and feeling worn out. You know, I kept having hope that it would get better just if I did this differently or just if I got a different job or if I, you know, got a promotion or got a different boss, like all those things you just keep promising yourself that it's going to get easier. And it was like that moment of like, well, what am I waiting for?
Finally, last August, she stopped waiting. Emily left journalism behind, took some time off, got a part-time retail job. She's now exploring new industries. Today, this is part two of our conversation on the Great Resignation. Last week, we turned to Evan Horowitz, executive director at the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts. He talked with us about the economic impact of this Great Resignation. This week, we look at what it means to join the movement and how you can look before you leap, or if you already leapt, how to land on both feet. Join the conversation. Have you quit your job? Change careers, thinking about it. Do you have questions about career planning, financial planning? Give us a call. We have people who can help. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. First up, Kathy Robinson, founder and an executive career coach at Turning Point, which is a career counseling network. Kathy, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So what is the biggest career switch you've ever seen someone make, Kathy?
Well, I think anytime anyone goes from employment to self-employment, that is a giant leap of faith. But I had somebody who was working in an ad agency, and he decided to open a surf shop, which is award-winning, and he loves what he does.
So it worked out.
Yes, absolutely.
And are you seeing, we have had all this talk about the Great Resignation, and there are numbers there. In your work, are you seeing more people change careers right now than you have in the past?
Yes. Right now, it sort of feels like one of those wind-blowing money machines where everyone's jumping in and trying to grab it right now. But it also depends on what perspective you're holding. Some people are having more success changing than others.
I want to just bring this to our listeners again. Are you making a change? Are you thinking about making a change? Have you been affected by the Great Resignation because someone else has made a change that affects you, your job, your career, your happiness? What financial questions, what career planning questions do you have? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join this conversation. Kathy, so we know there are bigger numbers. That image of, you know, like that plastic tube and you stand in it and the wind blows, the money's flying around in the air and you're trying to grab it. To stick with that metaphor for a minute, are there different kinds of people in the tube than you would have seen in, say, 2008 during the Great Recession? Are we seeing a different kind of person make these changes?
We're seeing it across all different walks of life, all different industries. I think there was something about the pandemic that unplugged people in many ways. And so people who may have tended to be a little bit more loyal and stick around for a longer period of time are now questioning, especially with companies returning people to work sooner than people might feel comfortable doing. So it really is widespread.
This unplugged thing, I want to ask you to dive into that. I'm almost at the visceral connection with what you're saying, but I want you to take us all the way there. What does it mean to unplug from your work?
I always talk about a burnout equation where it has to be balanced on the side of employer and employee. Both sides have to give equally. So pay, meaningful work, benefits, fun projects are something that the employer can give the employee. The employee in turn gives back to that equation by motivation, by suggesting improvements. But part of the pandemic stopped that equation. And workers started to say, actually, what I want is more meaningful work. I want to feel like what I'm doing has a bigger impact. I don't like spending 2 or 3 hours in my car back and forth each day, which was part of what they were giving the employer. So the math has changed for everyone involved.
You know, I'm thinking about, excuse me, prior to being here at Radio Boston, I taught in a school of social work at the graduate level, and we were increasingly seeing people make career choices where meaning was more front and center. Just like, you know, corporate social responsibility at one point was about, you know, are you doing brand loyalty to a cancer research foundation, for example? And then over time, it became all about the ways that you do business. So is this part of a larger trend toward my work is integrated into my life and expresses my values out in the universe?
100%. I've been watching job seekers since I started my company in 2004. And in that time, tens of thousands of people have written in inquiries looking for career coaching. And I've read every single one of those. And louder and louder since 2020, there are cries for help for people who are saying, you know, I've done this for years. I just don't want to wake up and go do this anymore. Or I feel like I want my work to mean something. Or I want to get ahead and I want to feel like I'm progressing and at my current employer, I'm not.
All right. 1-800-423-8255 to join this conversation. We have Amy on the line in Boston. Amy, go ahead.
Hi. I listened to these. Thank you for the work you guys are doing, by the way. I listened to so many of these programs on television and on the radio, and there's a huge list of reasons why people are, you know, moving to other jobs. But when I go into PetSmart, when I go into, you know, when I'm trying to go through a fast food place, they're all closed because they can't find people. And when I talk to them and ask why, they say, simply put, wages. And what happened, I feel, is in 2020, many people lost their jobs and they were given supplemental checks by the government, which were based on the cost of living. So people were getting checks for $500, $600 a week. And then they're told afterwards that they need to go back to a 40-hour job that they didn't quite like for around $230 a week.
So the math just doesn't work. All right. Thank you for that, Amy. And I'm going to pick up. This is some of what we also talked about last week with Evan Horowitz, who I will say was very heavily in the lane of workers are in a position to demand more money right now. There are more jobs than workers. Should it flip, we will see a change again. So there is that other side. And I appreciate Amy's call. This gives me a great opportunity. So Kathy Robinson, executive career coach, founder at Turning Point, stand by. We are going to continue with you, but I want to bring a second voice in now. Jennifer Lane, who is a certified financial advisor, founder of Compass Planning Associates, which is a fee-only financial planning firm based in Westwood, Massachusetts. Jennifer, thanks for jumping into the conversation, too.
Hey, happy to be here.
So, you know, we're really trying to have a both-and conversation here, Jennifer. We've just been talking about meaning and purpose as part of this great resignation. With Kathy Robinson. So talk a little bit about the money side of this now. What are you seeing?
Well, people that want to make this jump, I mean, this is the financial planner saying, see, this is why we told you to have that emergency fund. This is why we told you to track your expenses so you know what's coming in and what's going out. And I think it's a good thing to have both of us on the show today because you think about what you're looking for and what's missing in your life, which for many of us is our life, is our work. And then the financial planning aspect is, can I keep everyone who depends on me in an okay place while I make this adjustment? If you're single, it's you that depends on you. If you have a family, it's your family that depends on you. So making sure that you're ready financially to make the leap, it's nice to have a little bit of a safety net.
And when you refer to an emergency fund, scope that out. Is it a certain number of dollars? Is it a certain number of months of savings? How do you think about it? And does that mean that people who are living paycheck to paycheck just can't make a change?
The paycheck to paycheck is the huge problem. Not completely unsolvable, but very difficult because how are you going to get ahead if you can't get into that next paycheck? And that might be a little bit about what the caller was just talking about. The unemployment checks were pretty big for a lot of people, And some people, that gave them a chance to take some time off and to reassess. If you're fortunate enough to not be paycheck to paycheck, building up the cash savings, whether even if it's a month, 2 months, 3 months, is certainly very helpful. But then also understanding what are your needs and your wants. And so you can certainly cut back on, if you know what your wants are, what you're spending money on that is not as important as, you know, your straight needs. What's your rent? What's your mortgage payment? What's the children's tuition? That kind of thing. You can oftentimes kind of scale back a little bit in order to make that switch to a job that maybe pays less, because it gives you a greater sense of satisfaction. Not that it always has to.
We are talking about the Great Resignation and how to help you look before you leap wisely. We have Kathy Robinson, founder and executive career coach at Turning Point, and Jennifer Lane, a certified financial advisor and founder of Compass Planning Associates. 1-800-423-8255 to join the conversation. We have Sophia on the line in Cambridge. Sophia, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I'm in a position. I'm 60 years old. I've been in management for a long time. I have a great skill set, and I want to step back. I don't want to manage people. I don't want to be in a position to manage people. I also don't want to go into a job where I'm hired at a lower level, but then, of course, I take the management role anyway. And I've been there before where I've done another manager's job just because I was willing to take a lower level, and I want to avoid that. How do I go about impressing on a new employer that there's nothing wrong with taking a step back in my career? I want to be able to do the work as an individual and team player, but I don't want to be a manager, and I'm not going to get quote unquote bored by not being able to be a manager.
So these changes, Kathy Robinson, as Sophia is saying, sometimes mean signaling counter to expectations of the people who are interviewing you. What do you have for Sophia?
I think you still have to communicate that it's a step forward in some way, because employers know that their half of the burnout equation includes motivating you and keeping you interested. And so they have a hard time believing that, you know, the ladder doesn't keep going and going and going, even if an employee firmly believes that I'm all done with management. I like solo work or individual contributor work. But you can still communicate to that future employer your excitement about individual projects or strategic work that takes the level of thinking you've done from a management perspective, but just channels it differently.
Let's go back to the phones, 800-423-8255. We've got Iris on the line in Linfield. Iris, go ahead.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me on air. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
So my question is, I am a clinical social worker, and I work at a hospital in mental health, and I also have a private practice that has been building. Because I'm so burnt out from the hospital, I plan to hand in my resignation. So my question has more to do with how do you, like for me, saying goodbye to patients that I can't bring with me, and perhaps that would apply to coworkers who you're saying goodbye to. You know, for me, there's an extra element of guilt in leaving people behind.
All right, Iris, thanks for that. And listen, just a little bit of, you know, I know you know as a clinical social worker that there's methods to separating with people that you're treating, and this might be actually also a time to talk with somebody who's doing supervision. You probably do it yourself at this point, but get reminders there. I think also, though, Kathy Robinson, how do we say goodbye when we're getting ready to change?
I think it's particularly tricky in her case because there is clinical confidentiality. But there are plenty of times when, I mean, think of all the people who are giving their notice right now and leaving clients behind that for whatever reason, they're prohibited by their current employer because of a confidentiality agreement or non-compete. And so I think it really is tying it up kindly the way that you just mentioned, and helping people understand that you were a partner on a journey and now it's their journey to take from here with somebody else who's going to take good care of them.
So Jennifer, before we go to break, I want to come back to you on Iris's call. When somebody is preparing to leave employment for self-employment, which Kathy said at the beginning of this, we see a lot more of right now, or those are the big leaps. What are the kind of questions you need to have in place about your financial coverage? I'm thinking about insurance, for example?
I think looking at the money and thinking about how you're going to make that leap to possibly lower income is very important. I've had clients do this, and especially in the healthcare field where you're working privately as well as for a larger employer, you can start to shift to the self-employment a little bit more easily by building up cash. If your income is going to be lower in this particular year, you might reduce what you're putting into the employer retirement plan in order to build up your cash. Pay particular close attention to employee benefits and healthcare too. It might be that you need to add in a disability policy through your private practice to replace what you're losing from your employer. So you want to build up cash and look at your safety net, your health care, and your disability insurance.
Today, what making a big career leap really means for millions of Americans who have been leaving their jobs for something better or to be done. Have you left a job recently, or are you thinking about making a big work-related change? You can call us, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us, at Radio Boston. Still with us, Kathy Robinson, founder and executive career coach at the Career Counseling Network Turning Point, and Jennifer Lane, a certified financial advisor and founder of Compass Planning Associates. Kathy, back to you. When somebody is beginning, well, you know what? We haven't talked yet about the person who is participating in the Great Resignation by just being done. How many people are you talking to who are saying, is this an okay point in my career to not work?
We're seeing a bunch of people start to consider early retirement, likely leading towards something like consulting or maybe self-employment. But there are a lot of people who, especially in their 50s and 60s, are sort of eyeing the finish line in a way that they might not have before.
And Jennifer, I think there may be some people who have this perception, if I wasn't planning, you know, for 58 or 60 all along, or 55 all along, then when I reach those ages, I just can't. Is that necessarily true?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, with a little bit of planning, you can always make it work. We've had quite a few clients that either really weren't, kind of like Kathy was saying, not super happy with their jobs. And then with the pandemic, it was just really too much. So either cut back or just cut out completely and leave, and trying to create the retirement maybe they didn't initially have in mind, but certainly figure one out that's going to work better for them in the long term.
800-423-8255. Janice is on the line in Arlington, and I think kind of calling in this space. Janice, go ahead.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I worked for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts for a total of 16 years, some of it part-time, some of it full-time, and was planning on retiring the end of 2020, but COVID kind of pushed that to the end of July 2021. And with my Social Security and whatever meager pension I got from the state, I was maybe making half of what I had been making as a full-time employee. So I have gone back to my original career as a freelance, self-employed American Sign Language English interpreter in order to make up some of the lost income.
So Janice, let us pick it up from there. Thank you for sharing your story, because it gives us a lot that we can talk about here. And Jennifer, I'll stay with you for a minute. Somebody who wanted to retire, wanted to be done, and then the money just wasn't going to work. Now actually doing freelance work as well as regular work to try to close the gap. Again, you know, we often compare 2008 to 2020, 21, 22, the Great Recession, then the Great Resignation now. You know, are we continuing to see people finding, wait a minute, things changed and I can't do it?
Or you think that it's going to be a lot better than you thought, and so it's not quite worth it once you have some time to step away from your job. It's important to go back and look at a couple of different things, because this caller said her Social Security. Keep in mind that in a lot of cases, you can suspend your Social Security if you go back to work. If you're not at your full retirement age, you lose some Social Security benefit if you work over a certain amount of money per year. So you can suspend your Social Security benefit, kind of put it back on hold. So when you do finally retire again, your Social Security benefit will be higher. And hopefully it won't affect the, or the pension won't affect the Social Security as much, because that's another concern. When you work for a state that doesn't pay into Social Security, having the two together, they can kind of cancel each other out to a certain point.
So, Kathy Robinson, turning back to you as a career coach, you know, I sort of, as I'm listening and in the reading to prepare to talk to you both today, found myself thinking, okay, so there's the heart, there's the head, and there's the pocket. And it feels like all three have to be aligned or controlled for in some way. When someone comes to you and says, I think I'm ready to make a big change, what are the first questions as a career coach that you tell them, you better start by thinking about these things?
Well, I always like the carpenter rule of thumb, which is measure twice and cut once. Just like Jennifer was just saying, sometimes we have ideas of a career that we think might fit. And in the career coaching world, we call it availability bias, where we see roles like teacher and we think, oh, I might want to be a teacher. But in fact, once you start talking to teachers, you realize that many of them are grading papers at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night, and the lifestyle is actually not all it's chalked up to be. So really, the first phase is investigation and exploration, and trying on as best as you can without actually holding the job, the career field before you're in it, learning everything you possibly can about it before you start investing anything in that direction.
And Jennifer, what's the homework on the financial side? So let's say that you and Kathy were sitting down with the same person. Kathy's just given them their first assignment as a career coach. Your first assignment as a financial planner is what?
I think it actually goes along with what Kathy was saying. Find somebody who's in that role that you want to be in and find out what the money is so that you understand better, more than what you'll find online, what the salary is, what the benefits are, what the hours are, and decide whether or not it's going to be worth it. Then go back and look at your own money and figure out what's in the emergency fund, what's in the retirement account, what would be my pension. You don't want to leave a job that has a pension, right, short of vesting. Or if you're lucky enough to have shares or equity, you want to understand the vesting schedule of your shares and equity. So go back, and if you don't have a financial plan, do at least a kind of a rough shot at a financial plan to understand what the money is going to look like in the next step.
800-423-8255 to join this conversation. William is on the line in Boston. William, go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Well, thanks. Tell us your story, William.
Well, I'm an emergency medical technician. I've been doing this job for about 7 years. I've recently left a job, actually, working with a, like, basically a geriatric population. And what I was dealing with there, you know, in my job every day, I see a lot of nurses, doctors, radiologists, everybody you can think of in the medical field. And generally, the consensus that I get is that everybody in the medical field feels overworked. Everybody feels underpaid. Everybody feels like there's too much of a threat to compensate for what can even be offered. A lot of us are getting overtime, double overtime, being offered way more money than we would be in any other situation with COVID going on the way it is. But even before COVID, our lives were in threat from our jobs. That was just a part of what you accept. With COVID, that is just through the roof. And to add to it, you have a lot of situations out here right now. People are getting like outside help comes in. They pay them $5, $6 more than you. They bring in new people. They pay them the exact same rate as you. There's just a huge turnover rate throughout the whole medical field because everybody's just getting shifted out by all these situations that are frankly insulting to the people actually performing these duties.
William, let me just briefly ask you before I go back to our panelists. You said you left the role. Did you stay in the medical field or are you making a field change?
Oh, yeah. That's I guess, sort of the upside is – anybody can jump from any medical position to another one for more money right now. It's exactly what I did.
Thanks,
when
William.
I found myself getting outpaid by, you know, new hires or people being hired in from outside companies to fill roles. I just hopped on into another ambulance.
Thanks for that, William. So, Kathy, I'll come to you on that. It almost sounds cold to call it an industry difference, because that's a dispassionate look at what we know has been happening for healthcare workers during just an unprecedented time over the last 2 years. I don't mean to be bloodless about it, but Williams is an industry here that is under great duress. How to think about that? Do you just make a change in your industry where everybody's feeling it, or is that a time to look at something else? I mean, Williams says, hey, at least I can go somewhere else and get paid more.
So before the pandemic, we were already seeing major cases of healthcare burnout. It was already at crisis proportions even beforehand. And so as an industry, if you think about it, how much people have invested in schooling and training to be in that industry, and how much they're paying, how much they're giving right now to all of us. That industry as a whole is one where there are ways to step sideways, maybe find an adjacency where you may be going into clinical research or some other sort of patient-centric help, but maybe not on the front lines. But the idea of pay competition between you and a new hire is basically everywhere you go right now.
All right. And I'm going to try to grab one more call in here. Nermeen is on the line in Boston. Nermeen, so we can get you a good answer, ask your question quickly.
Hi. So my question is, so currently I'm in a similar position where I can get a job for more money elsewhere, and it's a lateral move, similar company. But then I potentially have more opportunity to be promoted in my own company, but for like a slap in the face type of of pay. So given that they're not investing in their own employees, it would make sense to leave, correct?
So,
or would the potential opportunity for growth outweigh that?
We'll do a little bit of a lightning round here. And Jennifer, I'll start with you. So just to clarify, potentially get promoted in my current company, not good money. Make a lateral move, no career growth, better money. From your perspective, what's the right way to make that decision?
The place where you can work the longest is oftentimes the better for you financially than where you'll get the highest pay right now. So look at the whole package and how long you can work there, where the better environment is.
And how long you've already been there, is that part of the signaling of where you can be there, be the longest, Jennifer?
It can be. I mean, you certainly know more about, you know, it's the devil you know and the devil you don't know. So if you feel like you can stay at this job longer than another job, overall, that's going to be the greater money for your career than making a change.
All right. And lightning round now to you, Kathy. How would you advise Nermeen?
I would say you have to think about the mission of the company, the new one, whether it's aligned with you, the boss. We say people don't leave jobs, they leave bosses. And the opportunity for the kind of work and growing even more into the kind of work that you want. At some point, this giant game of musical chairs is going to slow down. And I do think people have to sort of pick their spot and commit to it.
All right. And on that, Kathy Robinson, founder and an executive career coach at the Career Counseling Network, Turning Point, and Jennifer Lane, a certified financial advisor and founder of Compass Planning Associates in Westwood, Massachusetts. Kathy, thanks for sharing your advice today.
Thank you.
And Jennifer, thanks to you as well for taking calls and sharing your thoughts.
Hey, my pleasure.
Cinderella's slipper. It's called champagne. Champagne is a great leveler. It makes you my equal.
Well, I wouldn't quite say that.
Well, almost my equal. C.K. Dexter Haven, I would like to talk to you.
Let's go in the talking room.
That is Jimmy Stewart playing a tipsy journalist talking with a sober Cary Grant in the 1940 movie The Philadelphia Story. I am a sober host right now, but while Jimmy and Cary won't be here, I'm going to invite you to our talking room as we dive into all things cocktails. And listen, with or without alcohol, we're doing them both. We have some great recipes to share with you, but first, what are you drinking these days? What's your go-to cocktail? Non-alcoholic? Alcoholic? Maybe you found something new in the pandemic. You're trying to recreate your favorite drink from your favorite restaurant, or you've discovered something. Let's chat it up. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us again now, remotely, of course, Lonnie Newbern. He is the owner of the Boston Shaker, a craft cocktail shop in Somerville. Lonnie, welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be back on Radio Boston.
Oh, it's great to have you. We did a little scramble during the break. I've got all my stuff here. I know we're going to make some cocktails. I've often done this at home over the last couple of years instead of here in the studio. But I want to talk to you first about the big trends. Last time we talked with you, very end of December 2020, we did champagne cocktails. That was the big thing. What are the big trends in 2022? Where are we going, Lonnie?
Yeah, you know, as the nation's neighborhood cocktail supply shop, we're certainly seeing a lot of our customers being more seasonal with their sipping and certainly helping a lot of folks make drinks at home that are non-alcoholic. A lot of dry January sipping out there. We're seeing a lot of old fashions, Manhattans. People drink a lot of hot toddies, but we're just trying to inspire folks to make new drinks with maybe some of their favorite ingredients.
And so how do you make a new drink with those old classics? How do you think about putting things together that way?
Well, you kind of take an original cocktail or maybe like a modern classic. You know, our first drink, we really was inspired by the penicillin, which is a classic Scotch cocktail with honey and ginger. And we kind of did a twist on that one using some local products and some of our winter spices.
So actually, I think if you don't mind, I'd like to start. You've sent us a couple of cocktails. I'm going to try to make one of them, and I'd like to start there.
Yeah.
It's the Boston Mint Mocha. I have the ingredients here. So tell us a little bit about this drink while I pour some things out, et cetera. So tell us a little bit where you got this idea,
and then in a minute,
you and I can make it together.
Absolutely. Yeah, the Boston Mint Mocha, kind of an original one that was designed by the team here at Boston Shaker. We were inspired by the espresso martini, which seems to be having a moment, and the classic kind of minty grasshopper cocktail. So we really wanted to go with something that had coffee, mint, and chocolate.
All right. And I want to be clear for listeners, we will have this recipe on our website, radioboston.org. I've got ingredients here. Start me at the top. Let's do this, Lonnie.
Yeah. So this is more of a refreshing cocktail. Again, it kind of takes those rich and creamy textures. This one includes about four ingredients. You are going to need some milk. You're going to need some coffee. We actually have a special syrup we're going to be using today that's got peppermint and cacao or chocolate in it. And then we are using a local vodka in Bully Boys Vodka.
All right.
So when making most cocktails, you start with the cheapest ingredient or the one that you wouldn't mind spilling a little bit. So for this one, you just need some regular milk. You know, we recommend whole milk if you can. But we're just doing a 1/2 ounce of milk.
Okay.
And if you just pour that into like a measuring cup, usually you have a little 1/2 ounce indicator. Or if you're doing a little shot glass, just, you know, you can pour one into your shot glass.
Okay.
For the coffee, you know, we recommend just normal drip coffee or cold brew. If you're doing high end, definitely find some espresso. We've got some local cold brew here from Massachusetts. And you want to do a little bit more cold brew. You want to do about 3/4 ounce. And add that to your 1/2 ounce of milk.
All right. I don't know if you can hear in the background, but I am pouring and I've got a little, my shot glass is metal, so you can hear it kind of banging against my shaker. Yeah. All right.
Consistency is important. So if you're measuring, you're going to make the same drink again and just have a really balanced cocktail.
Okay. Milk's in, coffee's in.
If you're going to the local grocery store, you can pick up some fresh mint and make some mint simple syrup. We love using some of the best small batch simple syrups we have. So we have a company from California called Yes Cocktail Co. And they make a peppermint cacao syrup. So mint and chocolate, very much like an Andes mint. And you want to match the amount of coffee you put in there, the same amount, 3/4 ounce of coffee, and matching that with 3/4 ounce of your peppermint cacao syrup.
Okay. So one, this smells incredible, this peppermint cacao syrup. I mean, I could just sit here stick my nose in the bottle. Maybe dab it behind my ears and smell like that for the rest of the day.
Definitely has that perfect kind of, like I said, mint chocolate, kind of Andes mint.
Yeah,
it's going to give that kind of minty flavor. But to help that out, we actually, if you have some mint handy, again, if you're just shopping locally, you can still find some mint at the grocery store. You can actually pluck a few pieces or leaves of mint and put that in the cocktail. And when you shake the drink, it'll actually kind of infuse that menthol, that mint, into the drink. So if you have a little extra mint, feel free to throw it in there. And then today we are using a local spirit, as always. We're doing Bully Boys Vodka.
That's why this
is called the Boston Mint Mocha, because we're using a local spirit. And the total amount of alcohol in this one is only 1.5 ounces of vodka. So that's more to give it a little bit of a bite. It's really going to enforce those kind of minty chocolate and coffee notes.
Mm-hmm. Pouring that in.
And then
if you
are savvy with the bitters, you know, we always love talking bitters here at the Boston Shaker. They're kind of like the salt and pepper. So to give a little bit of an enhancement, a little more of a bite to your drink, we're using a chocolate bitters today from Scrappy's, and they use like a local chocolate maker in their cacao nibs. So I'm just doing 2 to 4 dashes, just like a hot sauce bottle. Just invert the bitters bottle and dash it in there. And that's going to add a little more of that rich chocolate flavor to our Boston Mint Mocha.
All right, it's all in there.
We got milk, we got coffee, we got our special peppermint cacao syrup and the vodka. And with the mint leaves and bitter, we're ready to shake.
I'm shaking.
So I always love adding all the ingredients first and then ice last. And then when you're ready to shake, you want to shake for at least 10 to 15 seconds. I'll give you guys a nice little sound clip here.
Okay, so now I cannot tell a lie. I am shaking sans ice. And when I pre-practiced this and I had to make my own, actually I took peppermint simple syrup and heated it and added cocoa to it to try to get a chocolate flavor. But I'm not using ice. Am I okay like that?
You could do that. Again, if we were making these at home, you had to make your own syrup. That's a perfect way to do it.
Okay.
You know, we happen to have some fun ingredients here that kind of take the extra step of making your own syrups at home. But this one, you could easily make a peppermint cacao syrup by doing that. Peppermint syrup and some milk chocolate.
Gotta tell you, it was pretty tasty. I really liked it.
You want to make sure you take this one a good 10 to 15 seconds. The rule of thumb is every time you have citrus or if you have cream, like the milk in this case, you always want to shake it up, wake it up. You want to shake that cocktail.
Okay.
And then this one, because when you shake milk, it becomes very frothy, almost like a milkshake. So when you're ready to strain, when you strain that in your glass, it's going to have that kind of Guinness effect. It's going to have that really nice kind of floating cream top.
It does.
Just if you strain that into a glass, I would do it neat with no ice as opposed to over ice. And the final step on this drink, if you have some mint left over, you know, it's fun to shake with mint, but it's also the classic garnish for this. So you would just take one of the broadest or largest mint leaves that you have and give that a little smack, or you can kind of tuft it between your hands. And you just want to lay that on the top on that kind of foamy cream that's been built by the milk.
Yes, he did tell you to slap, kind of smack the mint, and that releases the oils, right, Lonnie?
Absolutely. It gives it more of that menthol fragrance, very aromatic. Like I said, you could either tuft it like a bunch of mint, just kind of brush it against your hand. But it really does pair with the minty chocolate coffee richness of this decadent cocktail.
All right. So I've got that done. You sent a glass. I have poured mine in the glass. Does the glass shape matter?
Honestly, you could put this in a coupe glass. Traditionally, it is neat. So you could put it in a coupe. It would be nice in a martini glass. What you have there is what's called a Georgian, which is kind of an Irish coffee, Spanish coffee, kind of cream-based cocktail glass. It's designed to kind of hold the foam at the top.
And there's a picture. We tweeted it from the Radio Boston account. So if you're on Twitter, you can see the glass from our
Radio
Boston
account. If you're looking
at
the recipe online, the glass picture there is the Georgian, which, again, we carry in stock at the Boston Shaker along with other classic styles of glassware.
All right. Shall I take a sip?
Please do.
Okay, so here's the thing, right? One second you taste chocolate, one second you taste mint. You feel a little burn in your throat, but at no second do you taste vodka. I mean, you would never even know that you are drinking alcohol here. So two things. One, that makes this a very dangerous little cocktail, Lonnie. And two, does it mean one could do this and roughly get this flavor without the vodka if one didn't want the alcohol?
Absolutely. This is a rich cocktail. It's one that can be sipped slowly over time. If you just simply left out the vodka, because again, it's not an aged spirit. It's not enhancing the cocktail in terms of a lot of flavor. It's just kind of giving it more of that fortification. So leave the vodka out and you got yourself a rich, simple, just by shaking the milk, coffee, peppermint cacao syrup, and a couple of dashes of chocolate bitters.
Because I got to tell you, I would start a sundae that way with a good newspaper without the alcohol, and I would think it would be fabulous.
It is a good breakfast drink. And like you said, again, this the only alcohol here is just the vodka. And we actually have a few more recipes. One of them's got alcohol, but really easy to augment these and kind of make them into non-alcoholic drinks.
So you talked a minute ago about a second drink, and it's really very different. It's got rye whiskey. It's got hot toddy syrup. It feels very winter. So why don't you just quickly walk us through that recipe as well? You know, we just came out of a blizzard. Almost wish we'd done this right at the end of last week.
Yeah, I hope everybody's getting shoveled out.
People would have wanted that hot toddy syrup over the weekend. But in these really cold days, tell us about this.
Well, that's what we're doing. We're helping a lot of folks make drinks at home. They're looking for new ideas for the same kind of products they love making. So the hot toddy is on top of the list. But not everybody wants like a super hot drink all the time, especially if you have worked up a sweat doing all that shoveling. So the challenge here was, again, walking to your local grocery store, getting some great ingredients and making something that's refreshing, but also wintry at home. So what we took here was kind of a classic take on a modern drink called the penicillin, which really
which sounds
utilizes
terrible, those... Lonnie.
Well, it's a cure-all. It'll help you. It's one that was made by a classic cocktail bar in New York, but in reality, it really focuses on honey and ginger, which are great kind of cure-all notes that taste great with whiskey, whether it's hot or cold, but we've really kind of winterized this summer sour. So what we have here, we do have a really cool honey and spiced ginger syrup. It's got some black tea in there. It's got some lemon, but it also has a lot of cinnamon and these baking spices.
And if you can't get it, Lonnie, is there something you could use instead that if you can't happen to get that?
Yes.
Yeah. What could you use?
Just walking through the store, I would just grab some fresh ginger, peel it and slice it. And you're just making, you know, you can use honey as opposed to sugar. And you're making a simple syrup at home. So equal parts water with honey. And then peel and slice that ginger, throw it in there and let it simmer for about 10 minutes and then pour off the solids, strain off the solids. And you have yourself a spiced honey ginger
syrup.
There you go.
Excellent.
Which is delicious for non-alcoholic or, you know, obviously cocktails.
Excellent.
So we got our spiced honey syrup and all we're doing with, we have a lemon juice. And then we're working with another local product. We have the Boston Harbor Distilling, their Putnam Rye Whiskey, which again, right, made right here in Boston. And so we're basically making a whiskey sour, which means sour means shaken with citrus. And we're giving that a little bit of a spice with that honey and that ginger. Mm. And it's really going to be something that has a little bit of bite and really is refreshing, even if you're coming off shoveling, you know, feet of snow. So this one, it's the same technique. We're going to add ingredients to a shaker and then shake it up, wake it up. So what we have here is the sour. So you got to add your lemon juice. So I have 3/4 ounce of lemon juice. And then you want to match that. You really want to balance your cocktail with citrus and sweet. So you always kind of match the same amount of citrus with the same amount of syrup. And in this case, I'm using Boot Black. They're a local syrup maker out of Rhode Island. And they do this awesome spiced honey hot toddy syrup.
Sounds delicious.
Which could easily go in a great hot toddy. But today we're using it in a shaken sour with a whiskey and lemon. So I have equal parts spiced honey syrup with the lemon juice. I'm adding 1.5 or 1.5 ounces of this local Putnam Rye Whiskey from Boston Harbor Distilling. And then to give this guy a little bit of a zip to make it a little more wintry with those baking spices like cinnamon and really enhance the ginger, we have this awesome Buck Spice Ginger Bitters that tastes just like a ginger snap cookie. They have
ginger
all that molasses.
Ginger bitters are amazing.
Dark cinnamon and really good baking spices to kind of richen this cocktail and make it more of give it more of a bite.
And
so
Lonnie,
same deal. I add my whiskey, my lemon, my honey, and my bitters to a Boston shaker or a shaker, and then you want to add ice here. And just like we did for the cocktail beforehand, you want to shake this for at least 10 to 15 seconds just to give it all mixed together. Frothy and really balanced.
So while
I'll give that a quick shake for you.
Yeah, while you're shaking, I'll ask you a question. You're shaking in
Go
the
ahead.
Background. I noticed both of these cocktails contain bitters. And the last time we had you on, one of the cocktails contained bitters. So for those who may not know, what are bitters and why are they such an MVP in cocktails?
Bitters are the salt and pepper of the cocktail world. They're really a way for you to enhance or kind of make your own drinks at home. We all have the same kind of citrus and simple syrups. But once you start adding bitters to the equation, you're really giving a depth of flavor and more aromatic notes to your cocktail. They've been used for centuries in the original drinks. And now the world of bitters has expanded that you can really pick out anything from a citrus note, grapefruit and orange, to the more aromatic flavors, which are more like baking spices, to middle of the road, like cardamom and even black walnut. So we have over 100 plus bitters here, and it's more like kind of tasting the spice rack of the cocktail world and just kind of deciding what you like. Here we've enhanced this one by adding that ginger buck spice, which really does have more of a zip. So it's going to give this cocktail more of a texture than it normally would. So I highly recommend people at least getting an orange aromatic if they're starting out, but feel free to try out new flavors just to add to your soda water, non-alcoholic drinks, and obviously your cocktails.
Yeah, last time you were on, we did champagne with a sugar cube and aromatic bitters, and it completely transformed the champagne into something, I don't know, magical. You know, it just really gave it a different taste. All right, so you've shaken that. How are you pouring it?
I'm straining it from a Boston shaker. You always want to strain from the large tin because you have more liquid. And I have a Hawthorne strainer on top. The Hawthorne is named after a Boston bar. The Hawthorne strainer was invented right here in Boston, along with many other drinking tools, as we loved our cocktails. And so I'm straining this one. I'm actually straining it on the rocks or in an old-fashioned glass with a large ice cube. This could be drank, you know, over time, simple sips, kind of like an old-fashioned, even though it's a shaken sour with citrus. So this is a really bright gingery. As I smell this, I get that baking spice, that clove, that cinnamon, along with that ginger. And the Putnam rye whiskey is really rich. It's a little slightly higher proof, so it has a lot of kind of orange spice to it. And with the honey, the spice honey syrup, it also has some ginger and some black tea in it. You kind of have another kind of cure-all cocktail here, one that's going to taste great, not be too strong, but still give you a refreshing cocktail after some hard shoveling.
All right. So, Lonnie, we only have a few seconds left, so I'm going to do a quick lightning round with you.
Mm-hmm.
In your world, whiskey or vodka?
Whiskey.
Shaken or stirred?
Shaken.
Neat or on the rocks?
Oh, goodness. On the rocks.
Rosemary sprigs or thyme sprigs?
Rosemary.
And your go-to cocktail right now?
I am drinking 50-50 martinis, half gin, half vermouth, orange bitters, twist of lemon.
All right. And that is Lonnie Newbern. He is the owner of the Boston Shaker, a craft cocktail shop in Somerville. You can find Lonnie's recipes at our website, radioboston.org. Lonnie, always great to have you. Thanks for mixing it up with us today.
A pleasure. Thank you for hosting.